Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, bringing you more stories about incredible women who share their knowledge and let you in on their amazing experiences, all to help you learn and grow along the way. My special guest today is Dr. Philippa Cheatham. She's a board-certified surgeon. After successfully completing extensive surgical training and research in the UK, Dr. Cheatham came to Columbia University Medical Center in 2008, completing a two-year minimally invasive oncology fellowship in robotic surgery and prostate cryosurgery in July 2010. Dr. Cheatham is the author of three books and frequently appears as a guest on TV discussing cancer stories. She's also the host of her own TV web-based series with medical experts, patient guests, caregivers, and family members called Cure Connections. So without further delay, Dr. Cheatham, it's such a pleasure to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Deirdre. It's an absolute pleasure to join you today.
Well, thank you. And you have quite a background. You know, would love to hear a little bit about your journey into the medical profession. Why did you want to become a doctor?
Well, I think the journey's still continuing, Deirdre, because having started at medical school in 1991, in medicine they say that you never stop learning, and that's certainly the case for me, because having gone through the British medical training with medical school, residency, fellowship, just at the point of being fully qualified and ready to go, I then decided to hop across the pond, and I came
hop across the pond.
Exactly. I crossed the pond, and the training all started again, because much of my medical school training and residency training, even though I'd been to Oxford University for my surgical training, a lot of the training that I had was not recognized by the American board. So when I arrived in New York in 2008, to do a fellowship in urology, I also had to go back and do many of the general medical exams in all specialties. It was at least 10 years since I'd listened to a heart murmur, but I had to go back to the cardiology books and read all about it. So it's been a long journey.
That certainly is, but you know, your patients are in good hands with all of the training, and like you said, the training continues. You know, something about an earlier conversation that we had where you were discussing, you know, over in the UK your training, and then here in the States, and a little bit about almost deficiencies in medicine. And I guess the question is, are doctors spending, you know, enough time treating their patients and educating on disease prevention?
I mean, it's a great question. And I mean, I think we hear so much now on the media and about patient education and support groups and educating patients and empowering them to ask the right questions, to listen to your body, to be aware of changes, to seek out screening and practice, you know, good preventative medicine, eat a healthy diet, exercise. And yet, when we have the patients in our office who then are empowered and want to ask the right questions about what can I do to be healthy and stay healthy and what can I do to help myself, we really don't give the patients, I think, the opportunity not only to ask those questions, but even time for us to respond. We're all so busy, you know, under a lot of pressure from the institutions right. We work in to see X number of patients on so many days a week. And it's such a shame that I do think that we talk a lot about what can we do to treat this disease, and so much time is spent on telling patients about, you know, lab work and take this pill and these are the side effects and this might happen and this might not happen, that we actually forget that a huge part of good medicine is, first of all, heal thyself. And I think that we just simply don't have the time to spend with patients to talk about preventative health issues, and also to educate and inform the patient about what is actually going on with their body. Never mind talking about what treatment options are available for a certain condition, but what does those tests, what do they actually mean? And I think to empower a patient about what treatment option to choose, they really need to understand, what disease do I have? What is the stage of my disease? What is the grade of my disease? What are the options? What can I do to help myself? And that is not a 5-minute conversation.
No, certainly not. And knowledge, of course, is power. The less we know about something, probably the more fear that we have with that. So,
and I think I think you're absolutely right. And I think the other danger about knowledge is that when we're very passionate about what we do and we want to educate a patient in a certain amount of time, if we're not careful, we end up talking at the patient instead of finding out what do they understand by what we've just told them. Have they digested it? Do we need to explain that maybe in simpler language or more patient-friendly language, and allow the patient to ask their questions? Because what may be our fears and concern may be very different from what the patient's concerns may be.
That's a great point. And do you find that, you know, male versus female, how do they differ in terms of asking for information and their needs?
I mean, obviously, every single patient is different, and each individual has different fears, different concerns, different expectations, never mind different levels of education and understanding. But I do think there is a difference in that I see a lot of men with prostate issues, prostate cancer, and I do find that for many of these patients, and by no means a generalization, I find that women tend to be much better at asking questions, about being very discriminatory about the information they're given, you know, what's the evidence for this, what can I do? They tend to be much better at being proactive, at listening to their bodies. And so often I see male patients who will dismiss many of the symptoms. They're not so familiar with going to see doctors. And I think women, you know, we're so used to going for preventative health screening, breast screening, cervical smear, you know, pap smears, or taking children to the doctors. And so often we talk about the hidden agenda in medicine, where, you know, a mother may come with their child, and just as they're walking out the door, they may say, oh, by the way, I've got this problem. So there's much more of an opportunity to discuss medical issues, where, you know, we don't see that so much with men. And I think that certainly things are changing, and we are seeing much more now about men's health awareness, and men owning their, you know, understanding, you know your numbers, understanding what their blood pressure should be, what their cholesterol should be, what their prostate blood test should be. But I think typically, on the whole, women are much more proactive about asking about issues related to health. And certainly in my practice, when I see male patients with prostate-related issues, often the best questions come from the spouse.
Right. And, you know, in my experience, so this isn't surprising to hear this, but I'm so glad that things are changing, which is really good. So is this, you know, how does Cure Connections come into all of this? Why did you create this, you know, TV educational series?
I think there's many factors that led to us developing Cure Connections. I mean, we hear so much about the internet and Dr. Google, and certainly for many patients, the internet is a very valuable source to get educated about various medical conditions, but we also know that not everything on the internet is accurate or up to date.
Yes, and it's scary sometimes when you do that for yourself.
It certainly is, and we also know as well that patients are often very hungry for information and will latch on to stories of, you know, well, my neighbor had this, or, you know, my sister had this experience. And what we try to do with Cure Connections is offer an education platform that the patient could control. So all the television interviews and documentaries that we have done have been showcasing cancer stories from not just patients and their caregivers, but we have brought together experts across the fields in not just academic settings, but also in community settings, to make this available to patients wherever they are, whatever time of day. So at least with the internet, we have been able to develop Cure Connections so that patients and their caregivers can log on and they can watch interviews that have been recorded by experts in the field interviewing their patients and really educating patients and caregivers about the latest and greatest advances in particular cancers. But also, many of the subjects that we've covered on Cure Connections are not covered in blogs. They're not always covered right. by doctors. You know, for example, what happens if you're diagnosed with breast cancer and you don't have health insurance? What happens if you don't have a job? Or what happens if you've just been diagnosed with colon cancer and you're worried that you may lose your job because you have to go through surgery and then radiotherapy and chemotherapy and you have potentially many months off work? You know, how do you go about getting the right treatment, and what happens if you need treatment that your health insurance doesn't cover, or you may not have health insurance, for example?
Well, I think the information sounds so wonderful for different patients, and it almost sounds like not that when you think of a support group in the typical sense, you think of people sitting around, but would you say that this is a different type of support group?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, first of all, support groups typically tend to be on a set day at a set time with a set number of people, and there may not necessarily be experts feeding into that. It may or may not be individuals sharing their story and supporting each other. And that's great if it's in your area and it's at a time that you can make and it's relevant to you. But many patients that we've interviewed on Cure Connections have said, well, you know, a breast cancer support group in my area isn't particularly helpful to me because I can't attend Thursday lunchtime. And also, I'm not a 65-year-old lady with breast cancer. I'm 28 years old, and the issues that they're discussing are not relevant to me. We also know through Cure Connections that it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can get experts from the people that we've interviewed. And also, we give out information on the Cure Connections about relevant websites that patients can go to. We also have direct links to other institutions, so if we're interviewing a particular expert, that those patients can reach out to that individual and say, well, you know, I heard you on Cure Connections. This was, you know, the topic that you were discussing. You know, those experts are accessible to patients through Cure Connections. And also, I think it really helps when you have experts talking about how they manage disease. When we have patients integrated into that format, we're actually making it very patient friendly. So we're discussing treatment options, and we're also telling patients, look, these are not just your options, but this is how you go about finding out about your options. If you're in the middle of nowhere, how do you navigate who is that expert? How do you assess, right. how do you evaluate that clinician? So we're trying to educate not just about the disease, but educate patients what questions should you ask if you're going for a second opinion? And how can you get informed? How can you understand your test? And what support is out there for your family? And you know, we often forget that the caregivers They're not trained for this. They didn't sign up for it. They're not getting paid for it. And they need support as well. It's not just the patient themselves who's going through the disease. And many patients who we have interviewed have told us how empowered and educated they have felt and energized from the experience of not just sharing information with others and educating them, but just telling their own story about the journey that they've come on as well. And I think that gives a lot of hope to patients.
Oh, definitely. Well, it sounds like a lot of support. I'm talking with my special guest, Dr. Philippa Cheatham, a board-certified urological surgeon. In the next segment, Dr. Cheatham will share her thoughts on the 7 E's to help patients find their inner courage and strength.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge, host of Women Worldwide. Welcome back to the show. We're Dr. Philippa Cheatham, and I were just chatting about her TV and educational series, Cure Connections. So let's jump right back in again. We were discussing all of the wonderful ways that Cure Connections is providing support and the education through the experts, and this is so valuable. And I just wanted to ask you if maybe you have a favorite story or an experience with Cure Connections that you might like to share.
I mean, I think that Cure Connections not only has helped educate so many of the patients that have come to the site, but, you know, we often forget what we can learn as a host. And I'm sure, you know, you've interviewed many people on your program. You learn a lot when you talk to people, particularly when you step out of your own area of expertise. So for me, you know, I specialize in urology, and I see a lot of patients with prostate cancer, bladder cancer, kidney cancer. But through Cure Connections, I've interviewed many patients with breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer. And a couple of things that really stand out to me is a few months ago, I was asked to interview a 13-year-old lady called Callie, whose mother was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was only 6 and her brother was 4. And it's so easy at that kind of age to think that children don't really truly understand what mum's going through with a diagnosis of breast cancer. But I learned a huge amount from interviewing Callie that she really did know, and what she actually did to try and protect her mum through these difficult times. You know, here she was at 6 years of age, you know, being scared of the dark, but not wanting to go and wake mum up because she knew that mum needed her rest because she was going through this, you know, awful cancer treatment, and how she told a story about her fears of going to sleepovers and worrying that if she came back from a friend's sleepover that mum might not be there anymore. And when mum got a recurrence of her breast cancer, she says to me, you know, I thought that I couldn't trust her anymore because she told me that cancer didn't come back, and yet here was mum having a recurrence, therefore mum lied to me. And I think that, you know, we can learn a lot from listening to people's stories. And so many of my colleagues have said to me, you know, medical friends have said to me, you know, but you must hear these stories all the time as a doctor about, you know, how families react. But we really don't hear the real nitty-gritty, you know, the rawness of what this means for everyday families, you know, and how it can affect families so much. And I learned a lot from a 13-year-old girl about the last 5 or 6 years of her life and how she educated me about how doctors had spoken to her about her mum's cancer and what she found helpful and what she found harmful, and about how she was very concerned that she thought that cancer was a contagious disease, and, you know, was she going to catch cancer? So I learned a lot from that about how we must remember that cancer doesn't affect a patient. Cancer can affect a whole family, and really does. And of course, every family is different, and we can offer a lot of support. Like, how do you tell your children that you've got breast cancer, you know, when those children may be, you know, 3, 7, and 14, the needs of those children is very, very different. And there are support groups to help parents who've been diagnosed with cancer educate their children about what's going on. And at the same time, we don't just want cancer to take over their lives. You know, life goes on, and everyday life goes on. And just because somebody's been diagnosed with prostate cancer doesn't mean that all of a sudden everybody in the family stops doing what they've got to do, you know. So how do you integrate that and live with cancer at the same time as, you know, trying to address everybody's fears and concerns in a constructive way?
Well, thank you for sharing those stories, and how brave are those children to be able to go through what they're going through, especially what you said about a six-year-old who's scared of the dark, but yet is there for her mom and knows what needs to be done. And I'm sure every story is different. You had mentioned to me about 7 E's that I thought were really interesting. So these 7 E's that you came up with, how do they help patients to find that inner courage and strength that they need?
Well, before I tell you what the 7 E's are, I mean, we often hear about when patients are diagnosed with cancer and very overwhelmed with the diagnosis and considering different treatment options, and they may go and see 2 or 3 other doctors, get second, third, fourth opinions about what to do. And so often patients come to see me and they'll say, you know, I've been diagnosed with this cancer, what treatment do you think I should have? And so often, patients don't really understand even the type of cancer they have, the grade, the stage. So the 7 E's really go through. The first 3 are to educate, empower, and enable. And that refers to the fact that before you can think about what your treatment options are and what path you want to go on to address your disease, in order to even make those decisions, you need to be educated as to what exactly you have. You need to understand what your biopsy report means. You need to understand what your CAT scan, your bone scan, your MRI shows. You need to understand what grade of the disease do I have? How aggressive is it? Is this something that can be monitored? Is this something that's already spread outside of the organ where it started, for example? And once you're educated, that empowers you to become part of the decision-making team. So gone are the days when we're saying, right, you as a patient need to do X because I'm the doctor and I'm telling you to do X. Now what we want is to encourage patients to be as integral to the decision-making processes as their doctor. Now, obviously, you can't give a patient a, you know, medical degree, 5 years of training in like five right. minutes, but you can help them make the decision by educating and empowering them. That enables them to really look at the pros and cons of the different treatment options. And so often I hear that patients make emotional decisions because their mother may have had, you know, a horrific experience 25 years ago with, say, colorectal surgery, may have had a colostomy, and yet surgery in that, you know, 25 years later, it may not be required for us to do that kind of surgery. And so often patients will say, well, my mother had a mastectomy and then had awful side effects from radiation. But that may have been in 1973, for example. So I think that along the way of educating and empowering, through Cure Connections, we don't just want to forget that there's a lot of emotion here, both for the patient and for the caregiver. And we still want to empathize that when you hear that word cancer, often you don't hear anything else for the rest of that consultation. And patients do need time to come to terms with their diagnosis. And not all cancers require decisions to be made within a matter of weeks or even months. So we need to allow patients to come to terms with a diagnosis, digest the information, empathize with them. But once they have been educated, then they become very energized, re-energized, I think, to seek out second opinions and really do their homework. And I think for many patients, when they hear the word cancer, they're so overwhelmed and exhausted that just the idea of doctor shopping and going off to all these appointments, the more information they get, sometimes it's too much information before they've had chance. So the first four E's are educate, empower, enable, empathize, and energize. And in thinking about this journey of cancer through Cure Connections, I really do see that the patients who are educated, they emerge through this journey and evolve into being much more educated, informed decision makers. And I think it really, really helps people to understand what their options are.
That is wonderful. And this, I mean, it sounds like the 70s take time to kind of move through every piece that you need. It's educate, empower, enable, empathize, energize, emerge, and evolve was the last one, correct?
That's it, Deirdre. And I mean, it's a bit like, you know, we hear about the stages of bereavement that people go through. It's not a one-size-fits-all, you know. We don't all go through the same stages of bereavement in the same time frame. We don't even all go through the same stages of bereavement in the same order. Everybody's different. And we have to give each patient the time to get the information they need in their way. And the great thing about Cure Connections, you may not want to deal with this with family members around. You may want to log on at midnight when everybody's gone to bed. You may be a night shift worker who has a few quiet moments through the night where you may want to watch a segment on, you know, new treatments or focal therapies for a particular cancer. And you can come back to those shows and segments and watch them over and over again. You can stop them, you can start them. We have integrated these panels to try and look at different aspects of the disease, and so also to try and think about patients who may not fit the stereotypical mold. And particularly for the breast cancer segment, many of the patients that we interviewed who were young women, still of childbearing age, said that they just didn't feel that a lot of the support groups and the information out there was relevant to young women with the disease, particularly with advanced disease. So it's really trying to give a voice to everybody, but also give some general information related to those different cancers that apply to all patients. Everybody has concerns about how do you talk to your family, how do you tell your work colleagues, how do you get support, how do you get a second opinion, who should you go to, how do you get these tests done that may be very expensive, what about entering a clinical trial, who do I ask the questions from, and how should I follow up, and if you've been diagnosed with a cancer that may have a genetic link, how do you get information for other family members? If you're 35 years old and you've been diagnosed with breast cancer and you have three daughters, how do they get tested?
Exactly.
Trying to address those kind of questions.
Well, it seems like you are addressing all the right questions, and people can find what they need. You're right, everybody is different. With everything that you've done, and you've certainly accomplished a lot, if you could go back and just give yourself a little bit of advice, let's say going back to the time that you were in med school, what would you actually say to yourself?
Well, oh my goodness, many things, some of which may or may not be repeatable on air, but for the, I think one thing that we have to remember is that certainly in medicine, every day medicine is changing, it's advancing, and I think there are many type A personalities that go into the profession, and you can't know everything all the time. And even if you think you've got it all sussed out, new techniques, new imaging techniques, new advances in medicine, surgery, chemotherapy, immunotherapy, it's evolving all the time. So I think that one of the first things that I would tell myself is that you can't know everything all of the time. In terms of the training, obviously it's a long training, and ultimately yes. if you have the drive and the passion, I think another message I would tell myself is it's going to be okay. At the end of the light at the end of the tunnel is there. And also, you know, just to remember that once we go through that training and get educated and qualify, you know, just to remind ourselves from time to time that you can learn as much from the patient as they can learn from you. And if you continue to listen, I think that many doctors become very arrogant. They can become very self-righteous. And for many patients, there's still this very, you know, do as I say kind of relationship. And I would like to see through Cure Connections that we bring the patient on board and remember that they have as much to bring to the table. And I have learned so much from my patients in the last 20 years, and that you never stop learning.
Well, drive, passion, listening, learning, all great advice. So last question, how can my listeners find out more about you and your work?
So the website for Cure Connections, for those that want to join us, and this is going to be an evolving platform. So, you know, as we've talked about so many times already in this segment, that medicine is constantly moving. So we hope to continue not just to bring the latest and greatest in advances for different cancers, but to update this as we move forward in time. So the website is cureconnections.curetoday.com, and for anybody who goes to that site, they'll be able to select a particular cancer type. So if you want to look specifically about what's relevant to prostate cancer, breast cancer, colon, pancreatic, we'll be covering many other cancers as we move forward. But there are also there's a drop-down menu for patients and caregivers, addressing the non-medical issues as well, like financial concerns, social concerns, support for caregivers. All this kind of information will be available, and that's on cureconnections.curetoday.com.
Wonderful information. Dr. Cheatham, thank you very much for joining us today and for sharing your thoughts on the medical profession and your TV show, Cure Connections. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Deirdre. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'd like to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, and until we meet again for our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.